dun 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 bum 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 dun 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 dun. And then it's like the fussy fellas Verdon viewers viewers bum 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 bum.
Hello and welcome to Smash Bros. The we're keeping it. We're keeping it. Welcome to.
I wouldn't have noticed, honestly.
I barely did either. I was just sleepwalking through that.
Were you transfixed by me pointing at you like an old-time radio producer?
That is actually what made me do it, because I was thinking, what am I going to say about that point? I have this whole intro to think some clever thing to say about that point, and then it tripped me up. Hello and welcome to Fosse Fellas Verdon Viewers, the podcast about the FX musical drama series Fosse Verdon that's currently running right this second. So why don't you go catch it on FX? My name is Jimmy Blackman.
My name is Marty Scanlon.
And you're a Fosse fella. You're a Verdon viewer. I'm a Fosse fella. I'm a Verdon viewer.
And so together we make up the Smash Bros.
Oh, no, no. And now I had all that time to think about the fact that you pointed at me and what am I going to say about it? Am I it? I don't know.
Oh, boy. Okay, so it's 10:53 p.m. here in New York, but what's your excuse?
Long week at work, you know, it's Friday night, kicking back, letting loose.
Well, I'm happy to chat. I really liked this episode a lot. I've been very excited to talk to you about it.
Me too. This episode, do you have a title on this episode, Marty?
I certainly do.
Okay.
In five. No, the title was called Glory, right?
Oh, is that right? That makes sense.
Let's see. I just wrote Fosse Fellas Verdon Viewers in Google. Yeah, it's got to be called Glory. Yes, it was called Glory. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, this episode was a lot of fun. I loved the intertextuality of it. The way that the whole episode was built around the Pippin songs, I found very, very exciting. And the way that it culminated in the end was great. I don't know where to start. I think, first, actually, we got to start here. Last week when we ended things, I was about to see Avengers Endgame, and you were about to see that super... what poorly lit episode of Game of Thrones.
That was the first thing I said when I started watching it. I was like, wow, it's pitch black and I can't find my glasses because we just moved and I couldn't see half the episode.
Yeah. Well, I gotta tell you, Avengers Endgame was a lot of fun. I don't know if you've seen this movie.
I did. I saw it. Yeah. I enjoyed it a lot.
I had a blast and a half. I just thought our listeners would be wanting a little update on that situation.
I thought the musical number was weird. Like, I thought that they could have... I thought that the, like, using lyrics from different Candor and Ebb shows was sort of an unusual choice. But, you know, Thanos singing was good.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. You just can't give Thanos too good of a rhythm in any of his songs. Because if he starts snapping along, it's just... it's just really... So they had to go for something very arrhythmic. And so they went with sort of a C-side of... not even a B-side from Candor and Ebb. One of those shows that, like, Candor wrote after Ebb died, and he just found, like, a composer on Craigslist or whatever to write. Yeah, so let's get into this episode. They found a Stephen Schwartz.
He was cast so well.
My thought when I saw him was just like, my God, you walk through life for, like, whatever, however old he is. I mean, if he's playing Stephen Schwartz at that age, he's probably, like, 21 years old or whatever. You walk through your life for 21 years being just like, what do I do with this rubbery face of mine? And then one day they say, we're doing an episode of television in which Stephen Schwartz is a character. And you say, thank the Lord. And you get to
And you say, join us. Leave your fields to flower. Join us. Leave your Stephen Schwartz mask to sour.
You know, this I had never really thought deeply about Stephen Schwartz's career until I was watching this episode and last episode a little bit. What a weird fucking career this guy has. He was so young when he made Godspell and Pippin. He was like 22 and 23 years old. Comes out the gate, two huge hit musicals, and then essentially makes no, like, thing of almost any success for 30 years
and then makes the Green Show.
Yeah, which is bigger than either of those other things. But you have these two hits when you're like 23 years old, and then you turn 60 and have the biggest hit of your career.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
The Green Show I'm talking about is, of course, The Green Book, starring Viggo Mortensen.
Right. Yeah, what would a song from Green Book the musical be? And go. I'm pointing at you.
He'd be like, "Have you ever eaten a pizza like this? You fold it in half and you eat it." And then Mahershala would be like, "I play a lot of piano just like this. I fold it in half and I play it." And the song is called "I Fold It in Half." And it's about how you have to put aside who you really are sometimes just to get your art out there. Wow. Is this good? No. Is it entertaining? No. Is it funny?
It's better than Green Book, no. though.
But it is better than Green Book, the movie.
Haven't seen it. I'm just dunking on it to be part of the crowd. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, it's not good, so...
Okay, well then I was
right. It's a bad movie with two really good performances.
Right.
Anyway. The car, the book, the greenness, the colors, yellow blueness, mellow blueness. Okay, I just got us back to Godspell. And the land sinks into mellow blueness.
Very well done.
Wow, am I a genius?
Yes. No comment.
Okay, speaking of great performances, I want to talk about the scene between, just because this is a hard episode to talk about linearly, so let's just talk about the things that stuck out.
You've literally said this about every single episode of Smash or Fozzie Verdon, that they're hard to talk about linearly.
Maybe I have a problem. Maybe I'm the problem.
I mean, I agree. I think it's just, in general, hard to talk about things linearly. But why would we want to? So go with whatever scene you're going to say.
The scene with Michelle Williams and Aya Cash.
Right.
Oh my god. I thought that was incredible. I don't have tears in my eyes anymore ever because I'm something's wrong with me, but I
some sort of duct issue.
Yeah, I think it's a duct issue. I have to hook my finger into my jaw and like
right.
go really hard to make myself cry like Philip Seymour Hoffman in Synecdoche, New York.
That's because you've been edging too much. You have to go to like extreme lengths to make yourself cry.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just well. They call it welling. You just well. Yeah. Up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I realized we've not spoken about Aya Cash at all up to this episode, really, and that's a shame because I think she's giving a great performance.
Oh, I think she's doing terrific work.
Her biggest episode so far. But have you seen? Do you watch You're the Worst?
I've not. I've heard I would like it a lot, but I've never.
I think you would. It's one of. I can't exactly call it underrated because it's like a classic. Underrated right. show that everybody talks about for being that, but it is quietly like one of the best shows of the last 10 years. Like it's a very, very good show, and she's amazing on it, and I never would have thought she would be someone who I would ever, like we talked about last week, like people who work in this time period and stuff. She has such a modern cadence and a modern sensibility about her on You're the Worst, where I never would have thought that she would work in a role like this. I just think she's too modern, but she kills it in this part.
Yeah, she's doing, I like love her work so much. I think it's so understated and just, it's, I don't know, it's a testament to good acting when the filmmaking doesn't have to do much, you know, and vice versa. It's like a testament to good filmmaking when the acting doesn't have to do a lot. I guess that's just like what being in a good film or a good television show is just like the synergy between all those different things working together well. But like that scene, just using so little to say so much, and just there's no writing bullshit of like, "Let me tell you something, I know I'm not going home," and her being like, "No, I know," and having to go back and forth. It's just quiet and it takes its time, and there's no bullshit. I don't know.
And I would even say, go a step further to say, I don't think the writing in that scene is that good, which I don't think it's bad, but I think it is like, it just gives the sort of beats of that. It is kind of doing that kind of scene.
Right, it's like the serviceable scene.
Right. Which is kind of all it needs to be because they bring so much to it where it's like in what they're not saying, you're seeing everything. But then the scene does have one kind of brilliant writing choice right at the very end, when it's about, you're about to think, oh, she's going to say like the most cliche version of this, which is like, when I'm gone, I need you to be a mother for my daughter.
Yeah, and instead,
but she says a mother for your daughter.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that I think is, I mean, I don't know if that's pulled from real life or what, but that's a scalding hot.
Yeah, that was like a savage fucking,
but came from like a place of love, it felt like.
Oh,
like,
no,
didn't
I know,
feel,
yeah,
like she was trying to,
no, no, like, it didn't feel like a dunk.
No. What if she did just right after she said that, looked at her and raised her eyebrows and go,
just swish.
Just swish. Yeah.
And then there's like a graphic over the screen that's like, you got dunked. And then it says, this episode was sponsored by Dunkaroos.
And then it goes into that clip of that college sports reporter who's trying to read the teleprompter. And he goes, and boom goes the dynamite.
He goes, passes it to the man, shoots it, and oh shoot, what's her name? Joan Simon? No, it's not Joan Simon.
Joan Simon, no, that's,
yeah,
right.
He's like, and Joan Simon gets the possession of. She has the ball. She's got the brick. Pass it to the man, shoots it, and boom goes your daughter. And then just her going home and, you know, looking at her daughter in a different light, or maybe in the same light, but in a different light. Just, I loved that scene. I was very moved by that.
Yeah. Yeah, the way that she, when she goes home and tries to, like, put all the parenting she wasn't doing into one conversation,
yeah,
and is, like, just sort of fumbling with it. God, Michelle Williams is so good in this. It's just, like,
she's doing, it's, like, ridiculous. I continue to watch it and keep on being stunned that I'm watching a performance, that I just keep on getting lost in the character and going, like, yeah, I'm watching Gwen Verdon.
Yeah. The scene, the first scene, the shorter first scene with Joan Simon, it's like right at the very top of the episode, I think, when Joan asks her, like, how rehearsals for the play are going. And we already know from the previous episode that they're going poorly, and we're going to see later in the episode just how poorly and everything. And Michelle Williams just goes, it couldn't be better. And yeah, she, like, completely sells it. Like, there's no, you don't see, like, a, she doesn't do like an actor's giveaway of like a flicker of her eyes to the right before she lies or something like that. She just seems so genuine in this way that she's trying to be upbeat about it and trying not to say things that will stress out her dying friend and all this stuff. But it's, but you know she's lying. It's just these little things that are like, God, so many actors would not quite kill that line in the way that she,
yeah,
kills it.
She's amazing. She's doing the best Ellen Burstyn impression in the world. I'll keep on thinking it and keep on saying it. What else?
Well, so I mean, the it's at the end of the day, I guess a little bit more of a Bob episode. You know, the big overarching story is Bob's, and it's kind of, I guess to hit the big beats of it, you tell me if I'm missing anything, but it's Cabaret opens and Bob thinks it's going to be terrible and it's a huge hit. And he gets a blank check from that. Shout out to the podcast Blank,
yeah,
Check.
With Griffin Newman and,
yes, and David Sims.
Yes.
But he gets a blank check to make
big
whatever
fans
crazy
of the show
passion projects he wants. And he pours that all into basically fixing Pippin and getting really deep in on Pippin, the show that he signed on to reluctantly because he couldn't get any other jobs or was worried that he wouldn't get any jobs after Cabaret. And he uses his clout to sort of turn it into whatever he wants it to be.
Right.
And then over the course of working on Pippin, we see him sleeping around with all these different women in the cast and getting more and more success. I love the way that they use the title cards in this episode.
Yes, that was great.
More and more accolades, the Oscar nominations, the Emmy nominations for Liza with a Z, and the Tony nominations for Pippin. Crazy that those three things are all happening in a single year. Like, what a year for that person. Like, three
and
monumental achievements.
Well, and did you say the Oscar for...
Yeah, the Oscar
For Cabaret.
For Cabaret. And then you see him winning them, and him, he's taking more and more of his... What is this drug that he ate? Secanol? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
That's his drug of choice. And, you know, it all... It's a little bit cliche, but I guess it is his story of, you know, just like at this moment that he's having the most success in the world, he's just getting more and more unhinged and depressed, and finally when he goes to see Gwen one night drunk and high and discovers her with her her young boyfriend, he goes home and almost kills himself.
New Jim in the office. Oh wait, is that him?
Was that him? Jake Lacy? No, I don't think so. Jake Lacy's ripped like that. Jake Lacy's more of a, you know, plays a kind-hearted teacher in a romantic comedy type.
I swear that was Jake Lacy.
I mean, maybe it was. If it was, Jake Lacy's been hitting the Gold's Gym in Hollywood, where I've just my free trial has ended.
I'm about to start a free trial of New York Sports Club.
Ooh, you think you're fancy. New York Sports Club. That's just two steps down from Equinox.
Exactly. It was Jake Lacy.
Oh, really? Well, good for Jake Lacy. I didn't clock that at all.
Second all is a barbiturate that was used for, it was like a sleep aid, and it was at one point, the most widely abused prescription medication sleeping pill in the United States.
Well, it's probably not the most widely abused prescription anymore.
No, that's that freaking green stuff, dude. The green book.
That's right. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, also big, you know, I watch with Allie, who is like a fount of knowledge for all of this stuff, but the girl playing Leland Palmer, basically, like the Leland Palmer sort of, it's confusing for me, because Leland Palmer, the actress,
right,
is in All That Jazz,
okay,
playing the Gwen Verdon character.
Right.
In this show, the girl who he cuts from the number to add Anne Ranking in,
right,
is Leland Palmer.
She's the She's the actual actress who played.
So, the actress who plays.
So, just to start off, Leland Palmer. We're talking about Twin Peaks here, right?
Is that
what
we're saying?
No. What is Leland Palmer?
Okay, so Leland Palmer is also a character name in Twin Peaks, which is extremely confusing. Leland Palmer is an actress. You know the actress in All That Jazz with the big eyes who's playing his wife, who they have the daughter with?
I think so. Blonde hair, like kind of feathered.
Yeah, kind of like
hair.
Auburn.
Yeah.
Her name is Leland Palmer.
Oh my God.
Yeah, okay. Nothing to do with Twin Peaks.
Okay.
So
the woman who Fosse comes onto and
she hits
him in the balls and all that
is playing that woman, that character is Leland Palmer.
Okay, so you're saying that at this point in the making of Pippin, Leland Palmer and Anne Ranking are both dancers / actresses in the show. They will both go on to play roles in All That Jazz.
Correct.
Later in Fosse's career.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank
you for that font of knowledge, Allie, because I had no idea. I mean, I knew that was Anne Ranking. I knew that Margaret Qualley was playing Anne Ranking, but
she is doing like an insane vocal, not even impression, but just looks and sounds like Anne Ranking so much it was like crazy.
She's a really good actor. I like her a lot.
What else is she in? I thought
she was on The Leftovers. She played the daughter in The Leftovers. She's also Andy McDowell's daughter.
I did look that up.
Yeah.
I liked
she's
The
around.
Leftovers.
She'll pop up
I liked stuff. I liked the restaurant dinner better, but I thought The Leftovers were good too.
I have this crazy take where sometimes I think like pizza is better cold the next day than it even was.
Dude, I'm like kind of a bad boy, but like sometimes I start with the crust.
No, what? I eat breakfast for dinner sometimes.
Dude, sometimes I freaking make pancakes at work.
I just keep making them, and they go,
people say, stop.
Stop, stop. And I go, I'm making pancakes, baby.
And I have a shirt that says it. And
yeah,
nobody can take it
back
from me. Yeah.
And then I flip it inside out, it says it on the inside too.
Oh, a lot of good, strong, interesting, good women casting and performances in this episode. I really liked. I just liked a lot of the. I mean, I liked everybody, and I like everything. But I thought they were very good.
I agree. There's the casting on the show in general. Just they find people. I mean, not to move past your point about the women, because I think you're right that on this show that can sometimes that you have to watch out for that. There were a lot of good women in this. I think in general, casting wise, I just think they find good faces and stuff. Like,
yeah,
all those chorus girls that he's sleeping with are just like, they're interesting people that I want to know. Like, if next episode that girl with the short hair,
oh yeah, I love
character,
her.
I'd be like, I want to know who this is. Like, I want
totally.
Nobody feels disposable on this show.
Totally.
I like Pippin a lot.
I know basically nothing about Pippin except like two songs. I like know the music generally, but I like truly as like a theater kid am a bad theater kid because I do not know Pippin at all.
I mean, I wouldn't say I know it like super well, but I find the music. I mean, I've seen it maybe once, probably like a bad high school production or something.
Uh-huh.
But I find the music to be very good. Does Allie like Pippin a lot?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if she, would call herself, like, a, you know, number one Pippin fan club, but I think she likes the music a lot.
I want to say one time Allie and I had, like, a callback, like, a UCB callback together, and she told me there that she always listens to a song from Pippin before callbacks. Do you know about this?
Should I fact-check this? She's in the room next to me.
Is she right there?
Okay, hold on.
Yeah, just check.
Allie.
Because the point, can you still hear me while you're?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
The point is that I now have sort of stolen that from her because I find some of the music from Pippin to be very both soothing and invigorating at the same time, in a way that is very like perfect match. Like you don't want something that like pumps you up too much but makes you anxious, but you also don't want something that lulls you into like being catatonic. And so like listening to Magic to Do. Is
interesting.
Like a perfect, like it just like that music. It has that like that rhythm to it. Oh, ask her the question.
Okay, we have a question for you. Okay. Jimmy recalls. You can come on mic if you want.
Okay.
Jimmy recalls at some point you guys being in a UCB like callback together, and you telling him that you listen to Pippin sometimes to like pump up.
Wow.
Before a callback.
I don't think that's true, but it really? Sounds true enough that if this was like a fake version of my life, I would like believe it.
That's so funny because maybe it was somebody else. Somebody said that they listen to Magic to Do before every audition or callback. That wasn't you. You don't. Do you have a different song? This would have been like 2 or 3 years ago.
If I had to pick a song from Pippin to jam to like pump up to, it would be Simple Joys.
Maybe so, that's what it was.
Now I know it wasn't me if it was Magic to Do.
It's like someone's favorite Joni Mitchell song being a case of you. It's like, okay, are you a real fan?
Yeah. It's like that, but Simple Joys rocks. I have been in Pippin, and one of my favorite, when I was like a teenager, like not like professionally, like as a kid, and my younger brother came to see it a couple times because it was like community theater. And he had a dream once, like a very vivid dream that he came to see the show. And there was an announcement at the beginning that said, ladies and gentlemen, at this evening's performance of Pippin, there will be no floating hands. There will be no floating hands in this production of Pippin. Because you know how the beginning starts with
like the white gloves?
Like the
white
gloves. Exactly. And then like everybody in the audience is like, oh, fuck. And
then, to That's this like day, my brother bit. And I still... Like, that would be a funny sketch.
Such a good bit. My brother and I still this day are still like, ladies and gentlemen, there will be no floating hands in this performance of Pippin. And everyone being like, oh, we have to go home.
If somebody wrote something where it was just like, ladies and gentlemen, there'll be no tilted hats, no floating hands, no bent elbows. I'm sorry, but we can't provide any of those.
Can I tell one more Pippin story?
Yes.
Now please. I thought you were going to call me in for like Pippin expertise, and now I'm like just telling stories about Pippin. In this same teenage production of Pippin, I was like so deeply, madly in love with the teenage boy who played Pippin. And there's that song where he discovers like sex. Do you know what I'm talking about? That
yeah.
whole like sequence that like because yeah. it was Bob Fosse, it like got like very sexual and like
oh,
in
yeah.
the DVD like
the song
tits.
The song's called Glory Hole.
Oh
is
my
that right?
God, that was funny, but I hate you so much. And then at the end of that, he's like, sex doesn't give me pleasure, and like I need to find something else. And I was like so excited because I was like, I'm going to touch his shoulders and chest. Like, that was as much as I want. You know, I was like 14. That's all I wanted to do. And there were only three girls who were not Simple chosen Joys. To be in that number. Is it the end of Simple Joys? I feel like it's after birth.
No,
is like whatever.
We're having some. The connection's breaking up a little bit. But you said you were 14, and that was all you wanted to do was touch his shoulders. And I said, "Yeah, Simple Joys."
Oh, thank you so much. That was really good. You both have made good jokes, and I've sort of whiffed it on both of them.
No, that was a FaceTime issue, I think.
Anyway, there were three girls not chosen to be in the sex number, and I was one of them.
Oh.
And I was instead an angel in. Ordinary Kind of Woman or whatever that song was, and I was so fucking mad because I never got to touch his shoulders and or chest. Thank you.
Allie Gordon, everybody.
All right,
Allie, what were your thoughts on this episode?
Fucking loved it.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I loved it. It really is, I know that you've been talking about this, it really is like All That Jazz light.
Yeah.
And this episode in particular was, especially with like the hospital and the like production number.
Yeah,
and,
we
like,
haven't talked about
obsession.
That yet. That's like our next little.
Oh, cool. I don't want to blow it, but like.
You blew it!
I think if anybody liked this episode and you don't, if you've never heard of All That Jazz and you don't know anything about Fosse, if you liked the end of this episode, you will fucking flip for that movie.
Yeah.
Right.
They should be paying me to advertise this movie.
They should be paying us to advertise Fosse Verdon, and they're not. But.
Have you talked about Leland Palmer and stuff yet?
Yeah, Jimmy.
I got real confused.
A good 90 seconds thought I was talking about Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks. I know, it's so fucked up that name is the same name, but, you know. Bye-bye.
Bye, Allie.
Okay, hello.
Hello.
It's crazy that she just happened to be here.
Yeah, also, you know what? She's fucking lying about that audition song. I swear to fucking God. I don't know what's going on with my brain. I was sure that was her. I don't know. Anyway, so yeah, why don't we get into
let's talk about that number.
Grand culminating finale. This show's getting more and more, I think probably intentionally so, further away from just diegetic musical numbers and more into sort of dream sequences. And, you know, it's very, very Mad Men in that way, I think. Mm. And very, very Fosse, very, very All That Jazz, like Allie said. Basically, in this sort of last act of the episode, he's contemplating suicide. He's on, you know, at the window, and basically all of his, all of this work that he's been doing on Pippin starts to take on meaning in his own, you know, all these.
Which is amazing.
Like, yeah,
all of those lyrics are from that like finale, right? Or from
I think what Nicole sings is not from the finale. I think that's like a different song in Pippin,
but it's all from Pippin,
I don't
which
think
is amazing.
They changed any of the lyrics? Well, and that's actually what I was going to sort of lead to when I said like I love Pippin. Is I think Pippin's great, but it's like not that deep of a show. Like it's sort of silly in the way that it confronts big ideas. Like it's a very like, it's similar to Godspell in a lot of ways, in the sense of it just being like this very sort of like hippie, like touchy feely take on storytelling, but
sort
I
of
love
broad.
And I love that they were able to like take those lyrics and like make them feel incredibly personal
and weighted.
Like, I would love to see, like, that, the version of this episode about, like, any artist, their work coming back into their life in that way. Like, it's just, I don't know, that, like, recontextualization of stuff, I think is very exciting.
Yeah. I just, like, from a visual standpoint, loved watching the wall lift up and having all of them lined up there with the lights. It just was like, oh, okay, we're watching All That Jazz now. We're watching people who liked All That Jazz make a TV show that's supposed to mirror All That Jazz, which I'm fine with. It was great.
Yeah, it's fucking weird that that's where we are in television in 2019, that you can just do that. Like,
yeah,
that there's an audience for that. I mean, I love it, but it's just, it's an insane thing that that's just like a mainstream television show.
Yeah, it was great, and I loved the way it was shot. That like it all, it feels very practical in the way that all those things were done. Like yeah. It doesn't feel like some sort of like CGI mess of like people.
Yeah, it's not like some insane dream ballet with people flying around. It's
right,
just like
right.
It's rooted in text and intention and movement, which is like
yeah.
Right. That's like Fosse.
And Fosse gets his company moment where three women stand looking at him, go, Bobby, yep. Bobby, you've got to do this. Bobby, do this.
And then his friend is like, oh, pick up the phone already. God, I'm so jealous.
Yeah. Yeah. Patty Chayefsky is every other man in company who's just yeah. Like, Bobby, if I were in your shoes, man, listen, we'd go out, we'd smoke a doobie, and we'd maybe find a chick or two.
He's like, oh, well. Here's my version of that. Your line was perfect. Here's mine. It's like, well, kid, be careful. I'm trying to do Norbert Leo Butts.
Yeah, that's hard. Go for
you
it.
You have to say Kathy before every line. To be like, Kathy, what are you doing for?
They should do a new version of The Last 5 Years where he just has to do the Patty Chayefsky outfit and voice.
That'd be so funny.
I think it was a great sequence. The ending with the shot of him just sort of like mirroring the All That Jazz shot in
yeah,
the
like-
psych ward. I sort of wanted a little bit more of a twist on it. Like, it did feel sure. A little bit like, and we just did All That Jazz and credits.
Kind right, it's of. Like less homage and more just, this is the thing.
Right. And I sort of expected, like, one last card turn where something was going to happen in that hospital or something. Where it's something that would, like, subvert what we'd just seen in some way. Or be, like, somebody saying, like... You know, Bob, you know, you can't just live through these fantasies of the work you've made or, you know, whatever, right. Whatever the thing is. I was
or there's a, there's like a nurse who's Jessica Lange now. And she's like, no, I'm not supposed to be here. And she leaves.
But yeah, I was a little bit just like deflated at the end of it. Slightly.
Interesting.
Slightly so.
I guess just from me liking that imagery so much, I felt like pumped up about it, but I understand being like, I want something more than just the thing that is already there.
I like the imagery a ton too. And it's because I know that they can't top All That Jazz in that way. I want like, you know, like in the same way that it's recontextualizing the Pippin music, I want All That Jazz to be recontextualized slightly. I don't know sure. Exactly what it would be in this, so I don't.
I mean,
like
there's gotta be an All That Jazz episode, don't you think?
I think so. Now it's a little weird now that like that sequence has happened that is so All That Jazzy. I'm like, have they shot their chance there? Like what? But maybe I feel like there will be it. Probably.
I think I would guess that there will be, and I was not sure if there was going to be, but I would guess that there will be.
So this makes you think more that there will be.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's also just something about like seeing if we're looking at all of the most if this thing is really examining all of his most important works.
That's then, true. Like, and like this episode so clearly teed up that Chicago is next.
Yes.
Like,
which
you
I'm
know,
very
the,
excited
yeah,
about.
I am too. Then yeah, I guess so this was what, episode 4
yeah.
Of an 8 episode series. So what, I mean the little that we know about Bob Fosse's career, what do we think the next 4? So you sort of hit Chicago and then what is there in that time between like all the, I guess there's not much time between
yeah,
that,
I mean,
All That Jazz.
I truly know.
Yeah,
nothing.
I know,
unapologetically
yeah.
Know nothing.
No, it's it makes sense. But this episode was also the first, I want to say, to not be flashing back between different periods of time. Am I
yeah,
correct on that?
I think that's right.
Besides, like, tiny little flashbacks to, like, him as a kid dancing and that sort of thing. But I don't really count that because that's just sort of the pulse of the show.
Right. I love that image of him going to jump off the building. That's so... I just, like, love that.
Oh, the
that's
one
the
in, like,
that
the
like.
Penthouse apartment?
Yeah.
That it cuts between... Yeah, that's... I mean, the way that they, like I said, even, like, in the second episode when they started flashing back to things in the first episode, which is, like, a ballsy move, the way that they've continued to, like, just nothing, everything that happens in the earlier episodes keeps on coming back up. Like, it's this sense, you get this sense as it goes on that everything we've seen on the show, at least on the Fosse side of things, is like, we're seeing everything he feels guilt and shame about in his life. Yes. Like, every sequence that we see is something that keeps Bob Fosse up at night. And, like, the further we get into it, the more we cut between, like, thing. And yeah, it feels like by episode 8, it's just going to be, like, rapid fire, just, like, bouncing between things that in his life that he feels shame about. Like, it's building to a crescendo in a really exciting way for me.
Yeah, and it's what you said about the pulse too, right? It's like, it's what keeps him up. It's the pulse. It's the pulse of the show, and it's the pulse of his personality, and it just keeps on getting more and more prevalent. And I love that. I think it's very sinister. All this feels very sinister in a sort of weird way. In the way that I think, like, making something can feel sinister. Sort of, you can feel a lot of forces, whether it's like your own mental state or the state of the piece or the song or the thing you're working on. It feels all intrusive and invasive.
It also captures, like, the high that you get making something. And
yes,
it really, I think, does a great job of capturing how Bob Fosse is a person who, like, had to always be working on something or else he would be driven crazy by it. Like, it's just the way that we're seeing him jump from project to project to project. You get that sense of him just being like, I need that next hit. I need that next thing. Yeah, that's going to make me feel like I'm up alive. Like, that's they capture that feeling very well.
Being alive. That was Norbert Leo.
Bobby, you need to be alive.
Think about being alive for a change. You're spending all your life walking around. When did you stop and just look up and see those big gray buildings?
Bobby, I work in an office all day. I look at paper pens sitting in front of me. You're a man of the world. Bobby, you're out there on the streets. What are the streets like, Bobby? My wife, have you seen her? She's beautiful, but God, those eyes, they're always looking at me, Bobby.
Bobby, I have a penthouse on 71st and Madison. I pay $300 a month in rent, Bobby.
Bobby, we have the townhouse, the country house, the boat house. Bobby,
the White House. Bobby, I'm the president, Bobby, and I'm bored, Bobby. If only I had your troubles.
Bobby, you should see this legislature that's always nagging at me. Oh, what... You think you want a legislature, Bobby? You don't. A judicial branch, maybe, but not the legislature, Bobby. Count your blessings.
Anyway, here's a clarinet solo.
Oh, John Doyle, you're here. Okay, cool.
Hi, I'm right. John Doyle. Did you ever want to watch a musical where all the main characters play bagpipes? Well, today's your lucky day. I'm launching the new Into the Woods with Bagpipes.
you can make it Brigadoon, at least. You're just putting good bagpipes into the woods. It doesn't even feel like it fits, John Doyle. Okay. We should wrap up. Just like I wrap up my leftovers.
Jimmy winked.
I did.
And it was as horrifying as you can imagine.
I was hoping you didn't catch that, but you did.
I caught it. It was contagious.
Yeah. Classic Steven Soderbergh contagion.
Wow.
Sometimes you just riff without humor. You know what I mean?
That's the name of my 5 years autobiography in New York.
Riffing without humor.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
thanks everybody for listening. I don't know. I'm enjoying it a lot. I keep on saying it. That's what I always go back to. I'm enjoying it a bunch. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Me too. And you know what? I like this show a lot. Like, I feel like we read there. I was a little bit aware of some of the reviews early on that were a little bit mixed on it. I think it's a good show. I think it's a very good show.
I do. I agree.
I'll fight anyone physically if they'd like to meet me in the Grove. I will fight them.
And if anybody wants to fight me, don't, because I'll freaking fight till you're nothing, kid.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I don't know if you all have seen Avengers Endgame, but he's like that end, the last sort of big fight of that. And when he gets. Until next week, I've been Jimmy Blackman.
You have to cut that part.
Is that a spoiler?
Yeah, that's a spoiler.
Is that really you? Wait, that's considered a spoiler.
Yeah.
Yes. Really.
Yeah. Well, because it'd be funny if this is all just bleeps, but the person.
Yeah. Let's do it as bleeps. Yeah, I think that's funny.
Are you gonna put bleeps?
I will.
Are
we
gonna
this.
Okay? The person who, the only person who can, person who's like chosen to be worthy by like, and so.
That's why like is a big worthy?
Because he's
I will
like
bleep
a,
all this.
Because he's like a, none of this is going to get bleeped.
No, I will. I swear to God. I think this would be really funny if, and I'll bleep some things that shouldn't be bleeped too.
Yeah. Because he's like a, he's been deemed as worthy as like and like a sort of hero.
Oh, okay. Was that covered? I missed that.
No, it's mostly just sort of, just kind of read a lot of stupid articles about shit.
Okay.
There is a moment in like the first episode.
To find more Smash Bros, go to smashbros.fun. That's
smashbros.fun.
Or find us on iTunes where you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Smash Bros is produced in New York City by me, Marty Scanlon, and hosted by me and Jimmy Blackman.
I'm on Twitter at Jimmy Blackman, and Marty is at MC Scanlon.
If you know Brian Darcy and think he would be down to do this podcast and maybe sing on it for us?
What the hell are you doing? Tell him to email us at podcastsmashbros@gmail.com. We'll see you next week on The Great White Way.
Just make sure
and now,
absolutely
Brian Darcy James.
Send us $100,000 to this address. La 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 la.
Yeah. I missed that one a little. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I missed it and I was saying this has gone off the rails. Feel free to cut as much of this as you want. Let's just end it. Rate, review, and subscribe, and let's get this outro going.
All right. Until next week, I've been Jimmy Blackman.
I am Marty Scanlon, and we will view
you later, fellas.